So, Danny, tell me when you and Gilbert got started on in the Sydney School of Kickboxing.
I started training. I joined Karate Club in 1975. A friend of mine, John Way was his name, actually, and we worked together at the old Cape Breton Hospital. And he said, "Look, we got a Karate Club starting down in Sydney. He said, why don't you come in?" So I said, "Yeah, I wouldn't mind doing that." I was, you know, 1975. So I came in, and it was at the YMCA then. So I went in, and Dennis Stallion was teaching then, and Jim Maloney was down from Halifax. They had it going. So I went in, and I started, and here we are, 47 years later, and I'm still here.
When did you and Gilbert meet?
Gilbert, I started in 78. I started teaching. I started in 75, rather. I started teaching in 1978, and Gilbert came aboard in 1981, and we've been together ever since.
And how many years is that now?
That's 88 between the two of us. We go 47 for me and 41 for Gilbert.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so when did your school, the School of Kickboxing that pretty well everybody in our listening audience knows of, when would that have started?
We opened up a kickboxing school in 1987, and we were really involved in karate then. Then we started the kickboxing. Now, as to karate, you move up the ladder in karate, but you don't move up the ladder in kickboxing. You move up in a different level. So I'm saying that, like, I'm a 90-degree black belt in karate, and 10th's pretty well highest you can go, and Gilbert's an 80-degree black belt. You don't usually get your 10th until you're 7 years old and 70.
In our style, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't get tested until you're 70 for your 10th.
Oh, you have. There's an age component.
Yeah, yeah, and there's a year component. Like, you can't get tested this year and then get tested in the first to second, it's 2 years. Second to third, it's 2 years. Then it becomes 3 years, and then it becomes 10 years, and then eventually it's like, okay, you got to wait until you turn 70 before you go for that.
So there's an element, of course, of the skill and the fitness and all that, but there's also like an element of maturity or seniority.
Element of experience, knowledge, maturity, you know, all of that. But it's not just you're 70 years old. It's not just 10 years between tests. It's time on the floor. Like, if you get tested and then go home for 10 years and come back, don't expect anything, right? You got to be on the floor every night.
Yeah. So you two guys are totally committed to this sport.
Well, when Gilbert was saying there, when we started, we never quit at all. We just kept going. And when we started, we were going 6 days a week. We did that for 20 years.
Back then, it was the only day we didn't have it was Friday night.
Yeah.
We had it Saturday. What time is it Saturday? 10 o'clock Saturday morning.
Yeah.
2 o'clock Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
And was going all the time. And then it was Sydney School of Wei Chi Ru. And in 87, we stayed the same thing. We just added kickboxing to Wednesday night, remember? And it was Wei Chi Ru Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. And Wednesday nights, we'd do kickboxing. And it was kind of, back then, TSN was doing Wednesday night kickboxing fights, right?
Right.
And
yes.
we'd do kickboxing Wednesday nights. And then it got to be so popular that we really had to open it up for Monday and Wednesday nights, right? And the kickboxing really took off. But when we started in 87, nobody even thought of kickboxing.
No, I remember myself hearing of this thing, kickboxing, and you know, around then, and not really knowing anything about it. So when did it kind of start?
We were doing, when you think of it, we would come in here, we were doing three classes a night, and an hour and a half each class. That's a lot of work. And we done that steady for 20 years. So, yeah, we were really committed to it, really committed to it.
Oh, yeah, but it was a lot of fun, you know.
Like, yes.
I said, you know, I mean, you come down and you do a class or something, but when you climb in the ring and you're going toe-to-toe with someone who's trying to take your head off, and you do 6 or 7 or 10 rounds like that, and then afterwards you're sitting down, you're sweating, you're just sitting down having a drink of water, and you're laughing and talking, there's no high like it.
Yeah.
There's no high like it. Like, I mean, when you're in there, and like, we didn't fight like gentlemen. We didn't fight like gentlemen. More times, I mean, there's blood spurting everywhere. We go, there's more DNA on the floor of that gym, ring in there. But that's the way we fought. We fought each other that way. So and that's how we expected everybody else to fight around us.
Do you have any idea of how many people over those years, those 40-plus years that you would have taught, trained, whatever?
We were talking about that earlier, and you know what? We have a lot of black belts out there. People that came and went. We have people that were in here, they came as kids, and now their kids are coming in.
That's right, yeah.
Their kids are coming
yeah.
in. I'd say over the years, you know, you're talking 47 years, I'd say well over 20,000 people, I'd have yeah. to say went through this
yeah.
place, and maybe more. You couldn't really put a number on it. Our classes, our kickboxing classes, 5-6 years ago, we're getting 70, 80 a class.
Yeah, and before we were in this building, we were in the above the Capri, a smaller venue, and there was one 4-day run over there. It was on Christmas break, so the college kids were home. We did over 100 people each night for 4 nights straight.
Holy.
And it's hard to, I mean, you got to know our class. Our class is active. I mean, it's a very active class. You're no breaks. Don't stop for water. We'll get on your back. We'll rag you out if you're going to start that kind of taking break stuff. And to try to keep over 100 people active for an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes, it's challenging.
Was that in the 80s above the Capri Club when the Capri Club, like when Phil ran it, it was?
Yep.
And yeah, because I remember, because, you know, that's kind of the heyday for going to the bars and all the great bands, but you would occasionally hear the ruckus up there. And someone's,
well,
it's just Danny and Gilbert and those guys.
Yeah, you know. That's right. And to talk about the occasional band, Blue Rodeo, and they played the Capri Club before. Yeah. They played the Capri, they came back the next year, they center 200. But when they played the Capri, they had their break. Like our gym was the green room for them. You know, Phil would come up and go, like, we got someone coming in. We had Long John Baldry's autograph on the wall.
Really?
Yeah, he played there, and during his break, he'd come up and they'd set up a table for him with drinks up in our gym. Oh, yeah.
That was great.
Oh.
League Savings and Mortgage owned the building, and Don McLean was manager of League Savings and Mortgage. And he was really, really good to us up there. Like, he let us there. Like, I think we were up there 22 years, I think, in that building.
Oh, every bit.
23 years up there. But Don was really good to us. You know, he looked after us.
We were there. Loaves and Fishes started there, right on the second floor there.
Yeah.
I remember we had some plumbing problems.
Yeah.
And one of our buddies, Bertie, was having a shower, and the guy come up to cook from downstairs and, well, you're putting water in my soup. You're putting water in my soup. Right? But actually, then when Loaves and Fishes left, we went down to survey to see if we'd consider moving from the third floor to the second floor. Remember that night? It was like over the holidays or something. And there was a fire on the first floor. And it burned up, and they're 12-foot ceilings. And it burned through the ceiling into the second floor. So we're looking around. It's pitch black now in there. And we walk into what was the washroom. And I'm going first. And you can't see your hand in front of your face. And I'm going with my foot, looking for it. And there seems to be a step. And I go for the step. I go 12 feet down into the burnt pile into this first floor. And all I can hear is, like, I thought I broke my ribs. I'm laying there, and all I can hear up above is Danny going, Gilbert. he's not moving. He knows I'm not around. And I tell you, I had a hard time getting out because you couldn't leave. Because I was down, like, around League Savings and Mortgage or whatever, and you couldn't just walk out and leave a door unlocked. And anyway, there was someone working that
night.
That's
amazing.
Yeah, someone working.
Someone was working there.
So an office
came crashing through the ceiling.
Yeah, well, I knocked on his office. I said, "Can you let me out?" I said, "I fell through the floor."
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we had some. There were some comical times. Comical times.
Wow, that's something else. So we're here. I'm here now with Danny and Gilbert in the office at the third floor of the Lyceum on down in the north end on George Street, which is where their gym. Would you call it a dojo?
We always called it a gym, but strictly speaking, it's called a dojo.
Yeah.
But we don't only call it a dojo for the karate end of things.
Right.
Really, it's a gym for kickboxing, but between us, we always just call it, I'm going to the gym.
Yeah, so how long, when did you move into here?
We're here probably 15 years.
I'd say 15 years.
15 years. And like we traveled around, like when we're doing fights, like we did a lot of fights. Like Gilbert and I fought in New England. We used to go down to New England a lot, big tournaments down there. And him and I used to do a lot of traveling down there. And then our guys, we used to take them New Brunswick to be fight cards. We put 17, 18 fight cards on here in Sydney, and you get Newfoundland, people from Newfoundland, New Brunswick, Quebec, all down here participating. And then when we're training for a fight, like if somebody's training, we'll tell them, look, we got a fight. If they weren't going to train 6 to 8 weeks, I mean 6 to 8 weeks, you can't take a week off. If you ordered a fight, we wouldn't allow them to train.
Yeah.
And we work with Brad Ross down the box. We called Brad, we would go bring 73. Like everybody kind of worked together. We had sparring partners all over, eh? So it was good. It was good. We
same thing if they if Brad had fights coming up and he needed sparring partners. Let's go. We're going down to the boxing club. They got a fight coming up, and we jump in with them, right? And we'd spar with them.
Yeah.
Just everybody helping everybody else out, you know, in the fight game, just keeping everybody sharp, right?
Yeah, Brad, Sydney Boxing Club for many years.
Yeah.
Brad still got the club going in Halifax.
Yeah, Brad, he moved there a few years ago, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We talk a lot, actually. We stay in contact.
Yeah, yeah. And Brad, good guy, that guy.
Oh, yeah.
Him and I worked together at the jail, and like we go back a long time. He's deputy superintendent in Halifax.
Yeah, big job.
Yeah. Yeah. But we talk all the time when he's home. We get together and, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Would you guys have worked at the correctional center there when Tyrone was there?
Yeah, oh yeah. Tyrone and I were partners.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The great Tyrone Gardner.
Tyrone and Danny were partners. Everybody was scared shitless. Somebody would ring the bell. Ding, burger, come on, put him up, put him up there.
Tyrone once told me if people would spend more money on their kids, before they ended up getting in trouble and getting in jail than they do trying spending it on lawyers trying to get them out, it would be you have half the people that end up in trouble.
I remember Tyrone and I, it would have been the early 90s, working together, but Tyrone, that the superintendent, he didn't like him that. It wasn't Jim McKellop, this was afterwards. I wouldn't name the superintendent, but this was later on.
Right.
Jim was all gone. Jim was a great superintendent. But anyway, this guy, Tyrone didn't care for him, but this guy, he was on Tyrone's back, and Tyrone was listening to him there, and he kind of made Tyrone say, well, if you can't do the job, you know. And Tyrone sat up in a chair. He said, you know, he said, I'm going to tell you something. He said, I fought professionally. He said, you know, he said, I used to get $7 a round when I fought. You know what I did with that money? I saved it so you can get rid of me tomorrow. That's what he said.
Classic.
Classic. We used to, for years, we'd take Tyrone, Rudy Pulici, all the old fighters around,
Hilton,
right?
Hilton Smith,
yeah. We'd get them all together maybe every couple of months or something.
Well, Hilton used to come in and go with the kickboxers and help us out. And the thing was, Hilton, Paul, it was funny, he had, in this building, he had his first fight in this building in 1944. He was 16 years old.
Hilton told me that when I broke the book on boxing. He told me that he fought his first fight in the Lyceum. Yeah. There can't be many people. Hilton's passed away now, but there couldn't have been many people around that were still around that actually fought in here.
He loved Gilbert. Now, we had a picture of Rob, but they would come in with the kids, and the class would be packed, and we used to introduce them every time he came in. And they'd go around and be holding the focus mitts for them, and then they'd always get a couple of cans of pop. We were driving home, a couple of cans of pop, and he was one polite man.
True gentleman.
Unbelievable. He was a real great Parker. Guy. But the dinners, when we take Hilton and Ty and Rudy and anybody who was around at the time, and we'd go, there might be 8 or 10 of us. And Danny and I would go, we'd pick up the bill for everybody, but then we'd get the talks going, right?
Yeah.
And we'd ask them all, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know Tyrone and the Bull, right? You asked Tyrone.
Oh, yeah. Fernand the Bull.
Fernand
the Bull Cretchan.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, so you asked. And we'd be the same stories all the time, every couple months. Tyrone, tell us about your hardest fight. Oh, the Bull.
Yeah.
Oh, the Bull. And he'd say at the end of the fight, I can't remember now how many rounds it went, but he said he beat me all over the place. He said I was blood everywhere. And then finally Tyrone knocked him out at the end of it. And when they were leaving, the Bull, you know, they shook hands or whatever. The Bull said, oh, we'll be friends. God damn, you come up my way. We talk. Tyrone said, I don't even want to ever see you again. He said, I don't care anything. And they did. They become real close friends.
Tyrone told me that they would exchange Christmas cards.
Yeah.
And he did at one time go see him.
Well, they ended up both being horsemen.
Yes, that's right. They got into the horses. Yeah.
They fought one time. Tyrone said they should have stopped the fight. Like today, the fight would have been stopped.
Yeah.
Tyrone's eyebrow. Rudy Pritchard was in the corner and Rudy wanted to stop it. But Tyrone's eyebrow fell right over, you know, his eye. And Tyrone said, no, give me another round. So they taped it back up. But Tyrone said he could barely see. But they taped it and he went out and he won the fight.
Yeah, yeah.
But his eyebrows just flipped right over.
Yeah, those that combination, Tyrone and Rudy. But he, almost every time I see or talk to Tyrone, that story comes up about the bull, and it's always great. And we all kind of know it, but it's like, it's great. You love to hear it over and over.
Yeah.
It's just a fantastic story. He was from Montreal, right?
Yeah.
You gotta realize Eddie McHale up there.
We
had a lot of, you know.
Yeah.
We had 7 champions here at one time.
Yeah, all in the 60s.
You know, all in the 60s. Like, you know, you take it for Cape Breton Island.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Amazing time period.
Yeah.
So, just thinking about those 20,000 people that have come through here with you guys, you've trained groups like police and firefighters, and tell us a bit about that, Gilbert.
Well, we started out that we developed a workout for our fighters, and the workout we developed followed the way that we trained ourselves. So the workout was designed to break you down spiritually, physically, emotionally, just destroy you, and then tell you still had to keep going. Because if you're tired in hockey, you go to the bench, or basketball, you go to the bench, and if you get tired in the fight game, you get knocked out. So you really had to know how to pull yourself up when you were really destroyed. And we did that. That's what our workout was all about. People would come in and look at it, and then we got people going, geez, can I get involved in that and not fight? Like, I think I'd like to try that. So we had people doing that. And then I think it was Sydney Academy basketball team was the first team. O'Callaghan, what was his name? Callaghan.
Greg.
Mm-hmm. Greg Callaghan came in. And they hadn't won the provincials, I think, in 34 years. And he said, well, will you help us out? He said, well, you come to us every week and... They started and they worked hard. We couldn't teach them how to play basketball, but we had them playing basketball every bit as good in the fourth quarter as they were in the first quarter.
Right.
And they were winning all their games in the fourth quarter. And then they took the provincials that year. They brought in a poster, team poster for us and everything, right? And that kind of spread. Then we had the Redmen in here for a few years,
and
right?
They played better. When they go to Redmen, they always say, win or lose, their coaches would tell you, they played the same in the third round, in the third period.
Yeah. And then we had the emergency response team for the Cape Breton Regional Police Service in here. They're the ones that gave us our nickname, the House of Pain, because they'd come in here on training days, and we teach them. Back then, we were teaching speed handcuffing, arm bars, finger locks, all that type of thing.
Takedowns.
All the takedowns. So, if you've ever gone through that, it's painful, right? When somebody's throwing a wrist lock on you and throwing you to the ground. So they got going, oh, no, we got to go up to that House of Pain. And so it's kind of stuck, and we put it on T-shirts and sold it. You know, it became our identity, the House of Pain. But we went, I mean, if there was somebody who was trying to make the queue, if they're in junior trying to make the queue, they came here and they put their time in here. If there was people, we had girls who were, there was a girl, she was the first female to make Sydney Academy. And she put her time in here. She knew that step was coming.
Right.
And she put her time in here and run and drive and drive. People would come home for the summer and make sure when they go back in the winter, they want to make that jump either to the queue or maybe from the queue to the NHL. We had Craig Ferguson, who was drafted by Montreal, I think, and then went to Florida. And then ended up playing for a few years in Europe.
He was in every summer.
He came every summer. He came home. He came here, and he used to say, "If the young people only knew what this is," he said, "if I had this when I was in the NHL, I'd still be playing." He said, "I would have got an extra 10, 15 years out of the NHL."
Hannah Brown spent her last 4 years
Really?
Well, Hannah would tell you that she came here.
Before Hannah Brown has played with the Capers for five years.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
And when she first came here, I mean, Hannah's got all the things you'd want in a basketball player, height and size and everything. And we have one of our guys here, Gary Lewis, who's a real sports enthusiast. And he said, look, how much time are you getting? And at that time, she was getting somewhere between 5 and 15 minutes a game, maybe, right? Nothing. He said, you come in, put your time in here. We'll get you 30, 35 minutes a game. And she didn't come that year. And she got her 5 or 10 minutes a game. That was it. And then she came back in the summer. And then going on, if you follow her career, she was a powerhouse out there. She was, you know, she was doing 35 minutes a game and ended up going to Europe, playing in Europe. And through her, then her sister came, her younger sister came. But we'd had a lot of people that...
And Carlson was in with her.
Carlson?
He was playing for CBU.
Yes.
Right?
So
and he came here, and he brought a lot of CBU people in.
They loved it.
And there's people that would... There's coaches that would bring people in here, and I can think of a couple. Even the professional basketball team that was here.
Oh, yeah, the Highlanders.
Highlanders.
Yeah.
They'd bring people
Tyrone
in.
Livingston.
They'd be bringing people in, and people that were maybe trying to make the cut onto the team, and we put them to the paces, and you could tell by how they were doing this job, and we'd be pushing them, come on, get a move on. And the coach would look over and go, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I see everything I see right now.
Right.
This person's quitting.
Yeah.
Right? They're going through the paces, but they've already quit. They've given up on full effort. I already know what I know.
Wow.
Right? So, but we've had a ton of people come through here over the years. Like, and really, everybody's like family.
And the kids were good. Like, the hockey teams were really good with the kids. We, like I said, we know kids that came through here, they're married now with their own kids, but... Coming up, they were playing hockey in here, and it was great. It was good in there.
Well, geez,
we loved doing it.
We got trophies. Teams won trophies. You know, the provincials or whatever regional trophy. And I can show you, they're out here.
The banners, give them the doors.
But the trophies are here, too.
Wow.
They brought the trophies in because they thought, this is where we...
The club should have them.
Well, they said, this is where we really came together as a team.
Yeah.
This is what got us the trophy. You know, they had the talent. The coaches had the talent to teach them hockey skills and everything. But they felt this is where we had the ability to play the third period as hard as the first. And so they felt as a team, this is the place we'd like to leave the trophy.
Wow. That must be a nice feeling for you.
I thought it was amazing.
Well, we had Mickey Marish, or Mickey, one of our good players. Mickey won the title for us.
Canadian title.
Yeah. He won the
national title.
Mickey's from Truro, but... Went to the university down here, NSCC, and that's how he started coming in the old club. And he turned up to real, real... And today, he's got two kids of his own.
Yep.
But today, he runs his own club in Truro, but he's an excellent guy. But he trained, he won the title for us. But we used to tell everybody, like, if you're going to fight for us, you've got to put the time in, you have to train. And he did. And he was in some shape. If you said, be here at 8 o'clock... He was here at 8 o'clock, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we'll show you a picture of him up there when he won it. But good kid. And we all stay together. We meet once a year. They come down from Truro. We meet here, have a little party up the host or something. And, you know,
nice.
We just stay together.
Rumor has it you have one of the best goalies in the NHL still to today.
Mr. Fleury?
Marc-André Fleury. Yeah, he spent one summer in here. I think... There might be a picture up there. No, there's not. But yeah, he was saying he was here for about 2 months, a month and a half, 2 months. First year he played with the Eagles, I think, when he came out.
Yeah. We had this.
He used to laugh. He used to hate coming up here, too.
Yeah. Most of them do.
So with the coach, like, at you know, was, like at the time, was Blair? He was
Blair was around then, yeah. Blair
Joseph, sort of, we're talking.
Blair kind of pushed him this way.
Yeah, like, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But another great Cape Breton fighter.
Yeah, but you know, yeah.
He had one good fight.
Well, Blair and I and Gil were still tight, Abe. Like, Blair and I see each other once a week, and he had one good fight. He could joke about it, Abe. But
I'll tell you a good Blair story. Daniel a few years ago got inducted into the Hall of Fame down here, right?
Daniel
Mills. Yeah.
2014.
Yes.
Got inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Is it Daniel or Danny?
So he's up giving a speech, right? We're all there, and Danny's going, you know, doing this for a while, and a fella come up to me the other day and says, you know, you've been fighting for a long time. What's it like to get knocked out? And I said, holy jeez, he thinks I'm Blair Joseph.
The joke, I love it. I don't remember who first told me it. I don't know if it was Blair, but they say when he got knocked out, he was flat in his feet, and his feet were upright and on the bottom of his shoes. It said, eat a case.
Eat a case.
Simon had that, but when he put on the shoes, eat a case.
I mean, the greatest piece of advertising.
Yeah.
Blair was a good little boxer, you know. He had that one pro fighting. But he won 50 amateur fights. It was just that one.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah.
You know, he'd come up with Rocky McDougall. He'd come up with Lambert McIntosh.
Yeah.
He'd come up with all those good boxers.
Oh, yeah, right.
So,
yeah, you know. And all those guys training together, you know. He helped
Gardens
them move.
There, crazy down there.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, Rudy's line about the Venetian Gardens is, if you ever drop your towel in the training part down below, if you ever dropped your towel on the floor down there, leave it there.
Yeah.
That's,
but I mean, you know, we were never a spa type gym.
No.
You know, we used to tell people, like, if you want to go to a gym and pay good money and have someone pat you on the back and tell you you're doing a good job when you're not even breaking a sweat, you should go find somewhere else.
Right.
If you come in here, once you pay your money, we go, okay. Now, all the abuse that's coming your way, you paid for it. Remember that, right?
Yeah.
But we wouldn't cut anybody slack. Didn't matter who you were, we wouldn't cut
you
slack.
You know what, Paul, when you talk about me, there's lots of people we had through here that didn't have the money. And
Money wasn't
a big thing for us, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We always said, we never made, like, if the bills were paid, the rent was paid, the power bill was paid, but we'd sooner see them in working over it. Because a lot of people couldn't afford it, right?
Well,
and we didn't charge much. We were probably the lowest price.
We still were right till last week. We were.
Yeah.
We're still the lowest in town.
Yeah.
But the reason I took over the books years ago, I can remember nobody was paying. And Danny was pulling money out of his own pocket to pay the rent where we were. And I went, what are we doing here? Well, you know, the poor little bugger, he hasn't got any money. I said, I'm going down the road with a 2-4 under his arm the other day. So he's got money for some things, he just doesn't have it for others.
Yeah.
We have to get their priorities straight.
Yeah.
So, but still, I know we had one of our black belts had a little trouble with some kids. They got in a little hustle there that could have been some legal action. And he said, no, in the gym. He said, I want them in the gym. Just to teach them some discipline, some structure, stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
But we've had people, I can't even imagine who wouldn't have been through here. If you want to be a cop, if you wanted to get in shape, this is where you came.
Who's some of the guys that are still with you now training that, you know, go back like 30 years or so?
Well, I'll tell you what's interesting with our karate club. In an era where people go and they get a black belt and they think, whoa, I'm going to hang out my shingle. I'm a sensei. I'm a master. When we line up on the front line of our, I'm an 8th-degree black belt, and I line up as a student.
Right.
Daniel's the instructor. And in that line, there's a 7th-degree black belt and a 6th-degree black belt and a 5th-degree black belt and some 4ths and some 3rds. Like our front line, they could all be running schools and be masters, and our masters. We're still students here.
Greg McKenzie's up there, 74 years old. He doesn't miss a night.
Greg,
73 black belt.
Wow.
Starting 72 when Jim Maloney know that. He took time off, but then come back and been here ever since.
Yeah.
You know?
It really is kind of a fantastic, fantastic legacy, what you guys have done here.
Well,
and when you put it in this perspective of all these different people and groups of people and that have trained out of this place.
I'll tell you the other thing, too, that's kind of comical. Over the years, because we would do different things for people around town, but we got to be known as Danny and Gilbert. And remember, you went into the... It happened to me a couple of times, but I know you went into a tavern in New Waterford, and the guy turned around, I know you. you're Danny and Gilbert. Yeah. By himself, I know you, you're Danny and Gilbert.
Right. Yeah.
And I've been places and they go, Danny. I go, yeah, how are you?
Yeah.
They never know which one's which.
We lost some good fellas too in killed J.J. McClellan, J.J. Farquhar. He was killed in a motorcycle accident years ago over there. Really good fella.
Mark Steele?
Mark Steele, there's Mark up there. He fell under the Jeep. Open. He was only Anna Steele, remember Anna Steele?
Oh, yes.
Her son. He was only 18, nice kid. He was over Ribbon, going over railroad tracks, fell under the Jeep. That was 20 years ago. You know, and the last 2 years, Dave Murray, guy who ran the biggest club in New Brunswick, kickboxer club in New Brunswick, down there all the time. He supported us, we supported him. Cancer died within 6 months. John Gee, right there, over there, our referee. Our referee.
Right
here.
Oh, yeah.
Got a collision snowmobile accident. He never missed a referee. Come down here.
Here's a John Gee story.
Yeah.
We always had our fights on a Saturday, and we always had our weigh-ins, usually at a local small bar or something, right? We'd go in, and in the bar, we'd put on a meal. So whoever was coming in for the weigh-in, we'd pay for a meal. So it's spaghetti meat sauce, right? And so the bar would make some money off the spaghetti meat sauce, and the coaches would be coming in and buying drinks and that type of thing. So we tell everybody, we were doing it at the Black Diamond, I think, all the time then. And we said, okay, so the next fight, we're still way in the same place at the Black Diamond. John Gee drives down on his motorbike from Miramichi.
Oh, my God.
Right, he's right up around, is it Eel Ground?
Yeah, I think
right
so.
Right up the top, right? He comes all the way down, him and his girlfriend. He comes in, he walks into the bar, and you know, he has a drink, and he says to the bartender, the owner, Butts, he says, Danny and Gilbert around, when's the weigh-in? And Butts, he goes, what? When is the weigh-in? He said, next week. No, he says, it's today. He said, no, it's next week. He said, I am the referee. I know when it is, it's today. Butts, he pointed at the poster. He said, well, the poster says next week. Oh, goddamn.
Oh, that's great.
Drove all the way back.
And come back.
And come back the week after.
Wow.
Yeah come back the week after. Oh,
that's funny.
Yeah.
That's Paul Butts we're talking about there, the legendary proprietor of the Black Diamond.
Yeah.
Well, that's a funny story.
Yeah, well, and that's the way it was with all of us. Like, well, when John Gee passed,
we went up.
We jumped in a vehicle and we took off.
Yeah.
Yeah, we drove up
and
to
Dave Murray was a big shocker. Like, Dave was a really good, he was an 8-3 black club. Ran a big club from Franklin, had students all over.
Yeah.
And he took cancer within 6 months, but 3 months before he died, like, and he played the guitar. And we used to have our party every June at my place. And Duncan McLeod from Truro, Duncan's a 9th-degree black belt like myself. And we always stayed together, and Bernie Francis. But Dave called me 3 months before he died, and he was down, and he said, yeah, we're coming. I'm bringing another buddy of mine. You'll know him when we get there. He called me in May to April. He said, well, see, the party's still on for June. I said, yeah. Died the next month.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Dave was inducted into the Canadian Black Belt Hall of Fame. And I don't know if they've ever done it before, but there's a big, you know, a big gala in, I think, Quebec where they do the induction. But anyway, they came to Fredericton because they knew how sick he was. They came, they brought the award to Fredericton and gave him his induction there, right? Dave was quite a...
You miss these guys.
Yeah, for sure.
And there's a Rocky up there coming in with his wife. We put the dance on for Rocky.
Yeah.
We took the ring open. We set the ring up around the table. Remember that?
Yeah, it was neat. The head table.
In the Centennial.
There it is up
yeah.
there. Yeah,
in the Centennial. The head table looked like a ring. Oh, were you there? Yeah.
That was really nice.
Yeah, it was cool.
But and, you know. And what's his name? Benton Maynard. Maynard did like a comedy skit routine. Because he and Rocky went to St. Evex together, I guess.
Yeah.
They were friends. Yeah.
And I never forget, they were introducing, I was on the committee, myself, Blair Joseph, 80 Bates.
Yeah.
And on the committee, and 80 was MC in it at the time. And he was going around introducing anybody. And I remember 80, my name, Martin Rocker, sitting there. And 80 got, man, we have another, Daniel McDougall. He's got more black belts than spinners men's wear. Rocky, get up, Rocky. Too funny.
I just want to talk about the black belt business. Like you said earlier, 10 is the highest, but there's not a lot of people with 9s, right?
No.
Like,
I think there's myself and Duncan, Nova Scotia. Yeah. Probably, how many in Canada? But I don't say there's any more.
Well, Jim,
three.
Jim is a 10th. Jim Maloney, right? Jim was the first one to bring our style of...
To North America.
No, the first one to bring it to Canada. George Mattson brought it to North America. Yeah. And Jim was one of George's first students. And he brought it to Canada. So he's the ranking guy in Canada. And Jim would be 10th. I think Clay is 9th.
Clay is 9th, myself, and Duncan.
That'd be it.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then 8th would be me, Dave Mott. Roxanne is an 8th now, I think.
Yeah.
But it's enough that you can start naming them, even if they're across the country. You can start naming them.
That's how unique it is, and what an accomplishment for you guys.
And you can really, we can go down into the States and start naming them, you know, if we want to start 10th degrees and 9th degrees and 8th degrees.
Yeah,
right?
1/10 in Canada, probably just. Yeah, just 9th degrees.
Yeah.
9th degrees, Duncan and I.
Yeah.
So, I'll ask you first, Gilbert, how many nights or how many days are you training now?
Well, I try to train. The wonders of nature decided to give me cancer this year, so it knocked my energy level down once I went through radiation.
Right.
But another one of our black belts, who was dealing with it for years, I talked to him, and I said, man, my energy level is just sapped. And when you work out the way we did, in my mind, if I couldn't work out for 90 minutes, there was no sense in starting.
Yeah.
And I talked to him about it, and he asked me, he said, how you doing? I said, well, you know, to tell you the truth, my energy level is down. I'm not getting my workouts in. He said, you know what? That's the way I was. Go wherever you work, wherever your workout is set up, go and start working out. If you can only get 10 minutes in, But go. You may have an hour. You may have 90 minutes in you. You just don't know it. So it was the best advice I ever got. And I don't know why I didn't figure it out myself, but now I get up. Every morning I get up at 5 and I do an hour. I'm also a certified yoga instructor.
Okay.
So I get up every morning at 5, I do an hour and a half of yoga, and then get ready to go to work. And then when I come home from work that evening, I'll do another hour and a half or 2 hours, either upper body or lower body, something like that, you know.
And it's not like you got an easy job being deputy fire chief.
Well, it was probably easier as firefighter.
we won't get into all that, but... Less human resources issues.
Yeah, that's right.
What about you, Danny?
I continue on. It's the COVID. Yeah. Sort of closest down. Yes. Like we were going pretty steady every night of the week. Well, 4 nights a week. And then when that shut it down and we weren't opening. But we kept the karate going and then we kept the kickboxing as long as we could, just the regular. But right now I come in, I'm in here 2 nights a week with the karate, Tuesday and Thursdays. And 3 days a week, I try to do 5 miles each day, you know, just to keep myself. And, you know, I'm a senior now, well, a senior, so, you know.
Yeah, well, if all our seniors could be like you guys.
Yeah.
So the club is, you're
we're going to keep the club going.
You're
going
to kick, the karate part of it.
The karate part.
We're kickboxing part is.
It's finished.
It's finished.
Yeah.
No. It's just like, there's a time for everything, and you know what, when Gilbert kind of took sick and all that, and he, you know, you got to smell the roses, eh, right? And I enjoy it, like, I didn't realize it. People don't realize, like, we've been doing this so long, 47 years. I used to come home from work, 5, 6 o'clock, Gilbert would say, go in the house, wouldn't even have supper, go to the gym, I wouldn't be home at 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
I had 4 boys. I never had done homework with any of them.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't ever home in the evening.
Right, yeah.
So the last 20 years, we kind of, 20, 25, we started just doing Monday to Thursday.
Yeah.
So that kind of gave you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So now, I like having my Monday nights off. I like having my boys are older. They're not home now.
It's like so much fun.
Yeah. But I like having it off. You know, I do my own thing, but I keep myself active.
Yeah.
And then I got my business, the security, that's really business, so, you know.
Yeah.
So,
well, the truth is, go ahead, Paul.
How many people do you employ?
30.
30, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. The security business.
I started 22 years ago, and Gilbert ran it for me, more or less, just something that's good, and that took off for us, you know.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. It's a part-time, you know. For me, it is.
What's the name of the company? If anyone's looking for security, what's the name of the company?
Black Belt Security.
Black Belt Security.
Yeah. We're always hiring.
That's a good name.
I knew the name. I want you to say it.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you the truth. Now, we have been, and I got to say this for my poor wife, because every night, you know, I mean, this is just the way it is. You do it all day, you work all day, she works all day, you throw the plates on the table and you shove something down your stomach and you're gone to the gym. And I'd get home at, like Danny said, 9:30, 9:45, something like that every night. And I can remember coming home. I live in a split-level house. So I'd come in the door, and the stairs are coming up, and my wife at the top of the stairs crying. And I go, what's wrong? And we had two daughters then that were 20 months apart and sleeping in the same room. Oh, she won't stay in her bed. She's over in the other's bed. She's trying to pluck the eyes out of her. They were only babies. You know, one of, and then the dog knocked over the plant stand. There was plant and dirt all over the living room. And I'm going, I gotta look sad here, but am I ever glad I wasn't home? Right? So our wives carried a lot.
For sure, while we did this.
Now, I'd say probably 2 years ago, I started telling Daniel, I think I'm coming to the end of it. I think I want to start spending some time around the house, right? Like, and he wasn't ready. So we always had this thing. We said, as long as we're together running stuff, it takes two yeses for something to happen and one no to stop it.
Right.
So I wanted to shut down kickboxing 2 years ago, but there was one no buzzing around. Right? So I said, well, I can't leave him alone. But once COVID hit, then we had, I think at first we shut down for 4 months the first time.
Yeah.
Shut her down solid for 4 months. Then you're getting, oh my God, I like being home after supper. There's a whole thing.
Yeah.
I'm still not allowed to get the remote. That's my wife's. But but you get used to it. And it's like, geez, we missed a lot of relaxation time.
Yeah. Gilbert, he's really solid. Like, we've been friends that long. But like I say, he wouldn't. And he never just came right up and said it, but he'd never let me go until we closed the town, but he'd never leave until I left.
Yeah.
So, true friend and all that. But then we took apart. It's like I started playing the fiddle 5 years ago. Gilbert plays a bit of fiddle, but he's on the guitar now. So, you know, you get to keep different things going, eh? So, you know.
It's terrific. And, you know, when you can say, like you said earlier, you've touched like 20,000 people, right? You know,
or more.
Yeah. You know, that's all of Sydney, really. When you think of it, population-wise, you've trained an entire city, or two or three cities. You know, that's fantastic. So, well, I just want to thank Gilbert McIntyre and Daniel McDougall, also known as Gilbert and Danny, if you see either one of them out, for this. The kickboxing school is wound down, but the karate club is still going, and they're easy to find if anybody's out there and interested in learning a few moves. Right, gentlemen?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.